wrecked his grammar. Spencer bursts out with, "Me too. I have Mrs. Cleary too." The boys start chatting together excitedly, which makes me happy. Nico is so outgoing. He's able to befriend even the shyest kids. I envy his skill. I flash Janice a conspiratorial smile. Well, it looks like Nico has made his first friend here.
Yes,
Janice says with considerably less enthusiasm. Maybe they can have a playdate sometime?
Maybe.
She frowns as the lines crisscrossing her face grow more pronounced.
Has your son had all his vaccinations?
All public schools require a full set of vaccinations, and I'm sure she knows this. But fine, I'll humor her. Yes?
Including influenza.
It's not even flu season, but whatever. Yes.
You can't be too careful, you know, she says. Spencer is very fragile.
Admittedly, the boy does look a bit fragile, with his nearly translucent skin and tiny body swimming in that giant woolen sweater. But some color has come into his cheeks now that he is chatting with Nico.
It would be nice to get to know each other since I'm new here, I say. My husband and I are having dinner with Suzette and Jonathan tonight.
Oh.
Her lips curl in distaste.
I would watch yourself around that woman.
She gives me a knowing look.
And I would especially watch that handsome husband of yours.
I don't like what she's implying. Yes, Suzette is very attractive, and yes, she was a bit over-the-top flirtatious. But I trust my husband. He's not going to cheat on me with the next-door neighbor. I'm also not thrilled that Janice has taken it upon herself to comment on this.
Suzette seems nice, I say politely, even though I'm not sure I believe it.
Well, she's not.
I don't know what to say to that, but fortunately, at that moment, the school bus arrives, and Janice detaches her child from his leash. But I'm sure he has a microchip with GPS implanted in his brain or something. Nico barely acknowledges my slightly tearful goodbye because he's so involved with his new friend. He does allow me to plant a kiss on his forehead, which he has the good grace not to wipe away until he's climbing the steps to the bus. Ada, on the other hand, gives me a big hug and clings to me long enough that I wish I were taking her directly to the school.
You're going to make a ton of friends, I murmur in her ear. Just be yourself.
Ada gives me a skeptical look.
Ugh, I can't believe I said that.
Telling someone to be themselves is like the worst advice ever. I've always hated it when people said that to me, but I don't have any better wisdom than that. If I did, I'd have more friends.
I wish Enzo were here. He would know exactly what to say to get her to smile.
But he had a landscaping job he left for early this morning, so it's just me.
I'll be waiting at home this afternoon, I call after them.
I am taking a half day today to make sure I'll be there when they arrive, although in the future, they will likely beat me home by 30 minutes to an hour. The doors to the bus slam shut, and it drives away, carrying my two children away with it. I get that twinge of anxiety that I always feel when I'm separated from my children. Will that ever go away?
It was so much easier when they were growing inside of me. Well, except for the life-threatening preeclampsia I got in my third trimester with Nico, which was what prompted my decision to get my tubes tied. It is only after the bus has disappeared from the cul-de-sac that I notice Janice is staring at me, a horrified expression on her face. "Is something wrong?" I ask as politely as possible.
"Millie," she says, "you're not honestly expecting them to walk home all by themselves, are you?"
"Well, yes." I point to my house, barely a stone's throw away. "We live right there."
"So what?" she shoots back. "We live right there."
She points to her house, which is literally right behind us.
"And you don't see me leaving Spencer alone for even a second. If a predator is after your child, they could snatch him just like that."
Then she snaps her fingers right in my face to demonstrate the immediacy of the threat. "It's a pretty safe town, though," I say tentatively, not wanting to outright tell this woman that she's ridiculous for keeping her grade school-aged son on a leash.
"False security," she sneers. "Do you know that an 8-year-old boy vanished right off the street 3 years ago?"
"Here?"
"No, a few towns away."
"Where?"
"I said, a few towns away."
She gives me a look.
"His mother let go of his hand for 1 second, and he was snatched away. Vanished without a trace."
"Really?"
"Yes. They did everything they could to find him. Called in the police, FBI, CIA, National Guard, and a psychic. Even the psychic couldn't find him, Millie."
I don't know the details of this alleged abduction, but I certainly never heard of anything like that on the news. And it didn't even happen around here. To Janice, a few towns away might very well mean California. I'm not sure it would help to share the statistic that almost all child abductions are committed by family members. Janice seems to have her mind made up. Spencer will probably remain on a leash until he's 30.
"Well, they're going to have to go home themselves eventually," I say. "My husband and I both work, and we can't pick them up every day."
She looks at me in amazement.
"You work?"
Yes. She clucks her tongue at me.
"When my husband passed, he left me enough money so that I wouldn't have to work anymore."
That's nice."
"It's so terribly sad," she goes on, "that your children don't get to have a mother at home. They will never know the love they deserve from a mother who won't leave their side."
My mouth falls open. "My kids know I love them."
"But think about how much you're missing," she cries. "Doesn't that make you sad?"
The words, "at least my kid isn't on a leash," are at the tip of my tongue. But by some absolute miracle, I manage to keep my mouth shut. My children know that I love them. Also, I love my job, and I do good things for people at the hospital. And even if I didn't, we need every penny of both our incomes right now while Enzo is rebuilding his business out here. "We make it work," is all I say, Well, I'm sure you do your best with the little time you have with them. Somehow, I don't think Janice and I will be great friends. I was so excited to move here, but it's starting to seem like I've chosen the least friendly cul-de-sac in town. One neighbor is hitting on my husband, and the other is judging my dedication as a mother. Once again, I wonder if moving here has been a terrible mistake.
6.
School was a success today. When the kids get off the bus, they are bursting with stories about their first days of school. Nico has already befriended every child in the third grade class, and he successfully made milk squirt out of his nose during lunch. This is a skill he's been cultivating for months. Ada is less enthusiastic than her brother, but assures me she's made some new friends. Switching schools midway through the year is a hard thing to do, and I'm so proud of both of them.
And Little League tryouts are at the end of the week, Nico says. When is Dad getting home? He promised he would practice with me.
I check my watch. Suzette told us to show up at her house at 6, which is less than an hour from now. Knowing Enzo, he's going to cut it as close as possible. Soon, I hope.
When?
He presses me. Soon. He doesn't look satisfied with this answer, so I add, I have a great idea. Why don't you go hit the ball around yourself in the backyard? His eyes light up.
I love having a backyard, Mom.
Me too. Nico goes off to practice on his own in the backyard, which is a luxury we didn't have back in the city. I go upstairs to the bedroom and apply a fresh layer of concealer to cover the circles under my eyes that seem like they're always there these days. I start to put on some mascara, but manage to get a glob of it in my eye and then have to wash it all off because I'm tearing so badly. I apply a layer of something called nude lipstick, which is apparently lipstick that makes it look like you're not wearing lipstick at all. I can't imagine why they would make such a product, although a better question is, why did I buy it? We haven't purchased a full-length mirror yet, so I am doing acrobatics to check my appearance in the small vanity mirror over the sink. It involves some amount of contortion, but I finally decide that I look fine enough. Anyway, I have to figure out the dessert situation because that is my contribution to the evening. On the way home from work, I stopped off at the supermarket and bought an apple pie. Now, don't get me wrong, I love apple pie in all forms. But when I get downstairs to the kitchen and pull it out of the grocery bag, it looks like exactly what it is, a cheap pie from a local supermarket. I can only imagine what sort of commentary I'm going to get from Suzette on this pie. She probably goes to some fancy French patisserie for all her desserts. I pull the pie out of the plastic wrap, but leave it inside the metal tin. Then I grab a fork from the silverware drawer. With artistic precision, I rough up the edges of the pie and poke the center a few times. The pie looks decidedly less assembly line perfect now. Could I pass it off as home-baked? Maybe. As I'm scrutinizing the pie, the front door hinges squeal as the door swings open. Enzo is home, thank God, since we don't have much time left. I rush out to the front door to meet him, but immediately my face falls. My husband is literally covered head to toe in dirt, and we have to be at the Lowells in 15 minutes. Great. Millie! His face lights up when he sees me, but then I notice he's looking at the pie.
Apple pie, my favorite American dessert.
I made it, I say, testing the waters.
Really? It looks like from supermarket.
Damn, I guess I didn't make it rustic enough. He comes over to give me a kiss, but I back away, holding up a hand to ward him off.
You're filthy.
I was digging a hole, he says, like it would be silly to think he was doing anything else.
I'll shower after I do the baseball with Nico. He wants to practice.
Enzo? I glare at him.
Suzette invited us for dinner. We need to be there in 15 minutes, remember?
He looks at me blankly. I am amazed by his ability to forget any sort of social engagement, although he seems to be very good at keeping track of his work obligations.
Oh, he says. Was it in the family calendar?
Enzo always tells me to put things in the family calendar on our phones, but as far as I can tell, he does not check that. Ever. Yes, it was.
Oh.
He scratches his neck with his dirt-encrusted hand.
I guess I shower now, then.
Honestly, sometimes it's like having a third child. Actually, he is more like the second child because Ada is much more like an adult. I turn back to the pie. On a whim, I throw it into the oven. Maybe if it's hot, I can pass it off as my own. Somehow, I feel this desperate need to impress Suzette Lowell. I've worked for a lot of women like Suzette back in the days when I was cleaning houses, but I've never been in a position to be anything more than the servant of a woman like her. I don't like Suzette, but if we can be friends with the Lowells, it's a step up. It means I have finally achieved the normal life I always dreamed of. The life I'd do anything to get.
7.
20 minutes later, we're standing at the front door of 12 Locust Street. It took a little longer than expected. Even though Enzo took a quick shower, he then came downstairs in wrinkled jeans and a t-shirt, because of course he did. So I had to send him back upstairs to change into something a little more respectable. Now he's wearing the button-up black dress shirt I bought him 6 months ago when I realized he had absolutely no dress shirts, and, as expected, it perfectly complements his dark eyes and hair. And he looks achingly handsome. Also, as expected, he looks very uncomfortable, and like there's a chance he might rip it off at some point during the evening. Suzette would die. The apple pie is now warm, which helps it look more homemade. It's also very hot to hold. It's currently scalding my hands, and I can't wait to put it down. Nico is tugging at his own short-sleeved dress shirt, which has an even higher chance of being ripped off due to discomfort tonight than his father's.
Do we have to go to a boring dinner?
Yes, I say.
But I want to play baseball with Dad.
We won't be there long.
What are they making for dinner?
I don't know.
Can I watch TV while we're there?
I turn my head to glare at my son. No, you cannot. I look over at Enzo for support, although he looks like he's trying not to laugh. He probably wishes he could watch TV too. After a minute of my hands being scorched by the supermarket pie, an unfamiliar woman pulls open the front door. She is about 60 years old and built like a linebacker, with graying hair pulled back into a tight bun. She has the most perfect posture I've ever seen. Like, if you put a book on her head and checked on it 2 days later, it would still be there. She's got on a flowered dress with a white apron over it. She stares at me with dull gray eyes that bore right into me. Hello? I say, uncertainly. I check the house number on the door, as if I might have somehow gone to the wrong house next door. I'm Millie. We're here for...
Millie!
Behind the woman who greeted us, a voice floats out from within the depths of the house. A second later, Suzette descends the stairs, looking simultaneously slightly breathless, and yet without a single hair out of place. She's wearing a green dress that makes me realize her eyes are actually more green than blue, and whatever miraculous bra she's wearing pushes her boobs practically up to her chin. Her butterscotch-colored hair is shiny, like she was just whisked out of the salon, and her skin almost seems like it's glowing. She looks gorgeous. I look over at Enzo to see if he's noticing how she looks, but he's busy fiddling with a button on his shirt. He really hates that shirt. Hopefully, he can keep it on till we get home.
Millie and Enzo!
She cries, clasping her hands together with more delight than anyone could possibly have over the neighbors coming to visit.
I'm so glad you could make it. And so fashionably late.
Sheesh, we're only 5 minutes late. Hi, Suzette, I say.
I see you've already met Martha.
Suzette's eyes twinkle as she puts a hand on the older woman's shoulder.
She helps out here 2 days a week. Jonathan and I are just so busy, and Martha is a lifesaver.
Yes, I murmur. I have been many families' Martha in the past, but I was never able to play the part as well as this woman clearly does. She looks like a maid right from out of the 50s. All she needs is a little feather duster and one of those vacuums with the comically large engines. Yet, there's something unnerving about her. Possibly because she's still staring at me, like she can't rip her eyes away. I'm used to women staring at Enzo, but she's not interested in him or my children. Her gaze is laser beam focused on my face. What is so interesting? Do I have spinach in my teeth? Is there a celebrity I resemble and she wants an autograph?
Could Martha get you anything to drink?
Suzette asks me and Enzo, although she's looking at him.
Water? A glass of wine? I believe we also have some lovely pomegranate juice.
We both shake our heads.
No, thank you, I say. Are you sure?
She says.
It's no trouble for Martha.
I look over at the older woman, who is still standing there rigidly, waiting for the word to dash back in the kitchen and fetch us a beverage.
It's no trouble,
she chimes in, her voice low and gravelly, like she's not used to using it. We're fine, I assure her, hoping she'll leave. She doesn't. Suzette finally notices Nico and Ada, who are patiently huddled in the doorway.
And these must be your two beautiful children. How completely precious.
Thank you, I say. It always struck me as odd that when you compliment someone's children, the parent says thank you, like they are the owner of the child. And yet, here I am, saying thank you.
Suzette turns her attention back to Enzo. They both look exactly like you.
Not exactly,
Enzo says, which is a bald-faced lie.
Ada has Millie's mouth and lips.
I don't see it,
Suzette says. She doesn't see it because it's not true. Neither of them look anything like me. And while we're at it, neither of the kids share my personality. Nico is a lot like Enzo, and I don't know where on earth my intelligent, reserved daughter came from.
By the way, Suzette says, I just found out some fantastic news. Another family that Martha works for has just moved away. I'll bet she would be happy to clean for you, too.
Oh, Enzo and I exchange looks. Of course, I'd love the idea of someone besides me cleaning my house. But we can't afford it.
That's so nice of you, really, but I don't think...
I'm free Thursday mornings,
Martha tells me.
Would Thursday mornings work for you?
Suzette asks me. How do I explain to this woman whose house is twice the size of ours that we can't afford a cleaning woman? And even if we could afford one, there's something about Martha that makes me incredibly uncomfortable. The time is okay, but before I can come up with an excuse that doesn't involve me admitting that we don't want Martha's services, Suzette's eyes drop to the pie in my hands. She lets out a tinkling laugh.
Oh no, Millie! Did you drop that on the way over?
Ugh, I guess I made it too rustic. Thankfully, I at least managed to put down the pie on the coffee table in their living room while Martha disappears to the kitchen. The living room is much larger than ours. Every part of their house is twice as large as ours, or possibly three times. The outside is just as old as ours. The house was built in the late 1800s, and not much has been altered. But unlike ours, the inside of the house has been fully renovated. Enzo has promised to renovate our house the same way, but I suspect it will take the better part of the next decade. The house is gorgeous, I comment, and you have so much space. Suzette rests her hand on a large piece of furniture that I guess you would call an armoire. I wonder if we could get an armoire for our house. Who am I kidding? We're lucky we can afford chairs and tables.
All three of these houses used to be farmhouses originally, she says. This house was the main house where the owners lived, and 13 Locust was the servant quarters.
And what about our house? I ask.
I believe that was the shelter for the animals.
What?
Cool, Nico says. I bet my room was the pig's room.
Okay, she has got to be messing with us. I mean, if it were a house for animals, it wouldn't have stairs, right? Or maybe the stairs were put in later? I have noticed sort of a smell that...
Jonathan!
Suzette cries. Suzette's blue-green eyes are on the twisting stairwell leading to the second floor of their house, where a man is descending to the first floor. He's wearing a white dress shirt paired with a navy blue tie, and, unlike my husband, he seems very comfortable dressing up. Also, unlike my husband, his looks are otherwise completely unassuming. His facial features are blandly pleasing, his light brown hair is neatly trimmed, and he's clean-shaven. He's only a couple of inches taller than I am, with a slight build.
He seems like the sort of man who could disappear into any crowd.
"Hello,"
he says with an easy smile.
"You must be Millie and Enzo."
He turns to address the kids.
"And company?"
After Suzette's pretentiousness, Jonathan feels like a breath of fresh air.
"Yes, I'm Millie," I say. "You must be Jonathan."
"That's right."
He reaches out to take my hand, and unlike Suzette's death grip, his palm is smooth, and he doesn't make any attempt to break even one of the bones in my hand.
"So good to finally meet you."
Jonathan shakes Enzo's hand next, and if he is at all threatened by my husband, some insecure men are, he certainly doesn't show it. I instinctively like Jonathan. I can't say why, but it's just a vibe I get. I've worked in a lot of households in my lifetime, and I've gotten pretty damn good at reading people. Especially reading couples. You can tell a lot from body language. There are certain gestures I've seen husbands make that suggest they are exerting their power in the relationship. For example, a kiss on the forehead rather than on the lips. A hand on the small of the back while they walk. It's subtle, but I've come to notice it. However, Jonathan isn't doing any of that with Suzette. There's nothing to make me think that they are anything more than what they seem. A happily married couple.
"So, how are you enjoying the new house?"
he asks us. "I love it," I blurt out, having forgotten my shame about my house, possibly having previously served as a shed for barn animals. "I know it's small, but..."
"Small?"
Jonathan laughs.
"I think it's a perfect size. I would have grabbed the house if it were available. This one is so ostentatious, especially for just the two of us."
Score another point for Jonathan.
"So you have no children?"
Enzo asks them. Before Jonathan can answer, Suzette blurts out,
"Oh, no. We're not children type of people. They're so loud and messy and constantly need attention. No offense. People who want to make that sacrifice are absolute saints."
She laughs as she says the words, as if it's hilarious that anyone would want to give up their life to be a parent.
"But it's just not for us. We are absolutely in agreement about that. Right, Jonathan?"
"Right, yes,"
he says amicably.
"Suzette and I have always agreed on that."
"It's not for everyone," I say. Although, I couldn't help but notice that while Suzette was gushing about how wonderful it is to be child-free, Jonathan had a morose look on his face. It makes me wonder if they really are absolutely in agreement on the issue of parenthood. I wouldn't judge anyone for not wanting to be a parent, but it's sad when one person in a couple has to give up their dream to suit the other.
"I was telling Millie that I love how cozy and quaint their house is," Suzette says. "I agree, this house is just so sprawling and extravagant. Honestly, we just don't know what to do with all this space, especially our massive backyard."
At the mention of the word backyard, Enzo perks up.
"I have a landscaping business if you are looking for help with your yard."
Suzette arches an eyebrow.
"Do you?"
He nods eagerly.
"I have clients in the Bronx, but I am now trying to move out here. Such a big drive to the city."
"The Long Island Expressway is murder,"
Suzette agrees.
"Yes, especially the way Enzo drives. Every time he merges onto 495,
I'm certain he will die a fiery death. He had a very decent business back in the Bronx, but he's making an effort to get more clients out on the island, so he doesn't have to keep making that long drive every day. The goal is to transition his business to the surrounding neighborhoods within the next few years. And there are enough wealthy families around here that there's good potential for the business to grow and expand. I am excellent at landscaping, Enzo adds. Whatever you want me to do with your yard, I do it.
Anything?
Suzette asks in a voice dripping with suggestion.
All landscape services, yes.
She rests a hand on his biceps.
I just might take you up on that.
And then she just leaves her hand there, on my husband's arm muscles, for way, way too long. I mean, there's got to be a limit to how long you're allowed to keep your hand on the muscles of a man who is not your husband, right? But it's harmless. Her own husband is right there, after all. And Jonathan doesn't seem the slightest bit upset over it. He probably knows that Suzette is a flirt, and he's learned to ignore it. I tell myself I have nothing to worry about. And I almost convince myself, too. 8. I've never experienced quite such an elaborate dinner. Okay, for starters, we have place cards with our names on them. Place cards. And I can't help but notice the place cards have assigned Suzette to sit on one side of the table with Enzo, and me on the other side with Jonathan. Moreover, our kids aren't even at the same table. There's easily enough room for two more people at this massive mahogany wood table, but instead, another smaller table has been set up across the entire room. We practically need binoculars to see them.
I assumed the children would want their privacy, Suzette says.
In my experience, children never want privacy. Ever. It's only recently that going to the bathroom has ceased to be a family experience. Not only that, but the children's table is far too small. It looks like it would be better suited for the living room of a dollhouse. I can see from the expression on the kids' faces that they are not pleased. That's a table for babies, Nico grumbles. I don't want to sit there.
Fai silenzio,
Enzo hisses. Our children, of course, both speak perfect Italian because he spoke it to them all the time when they were little, so they'd grow up bilingual. He says they both have terrible American accents, but they sound pretty good to me. In any case, the warning quiets them down, and they reluctantly take their seats at the comically tiny table. I sort of want to snap a picture of them at that little table with their identical miserable faces, but I suspect that will enrage them. Enzo looks just as perplexed by the place setting in front of him. He plops down in the chair assigned to him and picks up one of the forks that have been laid out.
Why is there three forks?
He wants to know. Well, Suzette explains patiently.
One is a dinner fork, of course. Then there's the salad fork. And then you have a spaghetti fork.
How is a spaghetti fork different from a dinner fork? I ask.
Oh, Millie!
She laughs. And she doesn't answer, even though I thought it was a very good question.
So, how are you liking the neighborhood so far?
Jonathan asks us as he settles into his own high-backed wooden chair and carefully lays a napkin on his lap. I squirm in my own chair.
The chairs look painfully expensive, constructed from solid wood, but they are surprisingly uncomfortable. We love it. Suzette leans her chin on her fist.
Have you met Janice?
I have.
She's a trip, isn't she?
She cackles.
That woman is afraid of her own shadow.
And she's so nosy.
Isn't she, Jonathan?
Jonathan takes a sip from his water glass and smiles vaguely at his wife, but doesn't say anything. I appreciate that he doesn't immediately jump to badmouth his neighbor, even if it might be deserved. Suzette, on the other hand, she did have her son on a leash, I recall. It was coming off his backpack. Suzette giggles.
She's hilariously overprotective. She thinks there are gremlins waiting to snatch her child at every corner.
She was paranoid about some boy a few towns over that she was saying was kidnapped.
Right,
she bobs her head.
It was a custody battle between the parents, and the father drove him over the border to Canada. They got him back. It was in the news at the time, but she acts like the boogeyman is out there. And that's not even the worst thing about living next door to her. You should hear some of the crap she's pulled.
I wince. What else?
So, we had the grill going in the backyard once, she says. And we were hardly even cooking anything. Only some crayfish and a fillet. We only had a few guests over, right, Jonathan?
I don't really remember, dear,
he says.
Anyway, she continues, right in the middle of our little barbecue, the police show up. Janice called the police and told them we had started a fire in the backyard. Can you imagine?
You have a grill in the backyard?
Enzo asks with interest.
You should get one,
Jonathan says.
Or try ours out,
Suzette offers.
You're welcome to come over and give it a whirl if you want.
Could I? He asks excitedly. It's funny because when I first met Enzo, nearly 2 decades ago now, he seemed so much more exciting than any man I have ever met. He was practically dashing. Now I realize the cold, hard truth. This man's biggest fantasy in life is grilling burgers in the backyard. Or that's what you would think as he quizzes Suzette about the ins and outs of grilling. I would be able to get more on board if, while Suzette is talking to him, she didn't feel the need to touch his arm the whole time. Like, you can talk to somebody without touching their arm. It's possible. Thankfully, the conversation about grills is interrupted when Martha emerges from the kitchen carrying plates of salad for the four of us. I don't know what's in it, but it smells like raspberries, and there are little lumps of cheese in it. Thank you, Martha, I say, when I notice Suzette didn't bother to thank her. I wait for her to say, you're welcome, but instead, she just stares at me again until I have to look away. I can't eat with Martha's gaze on me, but as soon as she leaves the room, I dig into the salad. I'm not much of a salad person, but wow. I mean, wow. If all salad tasted this way, I might be a salad person. I had no idea it was possible for salad to be this delicious.
Millie,
Suzette giggles.
You're using your spaghetti fork to eat the salad.
I am? I look around the table and everybody is eating, apparently using a different fork than I am, even though the truth is
They all look identical to me. And Enzo, who definitely does not have more fork knowledge than I do, points to the fork furthest from my plate. How did he know that? Wow, this is weirdly embarrassing. I swap out the forks as quickly as I can. So, what do you do, Jonathan? I ask to draw attention away from the fork debacle.
Finance.
I offer a smile. Sounds interesting. He shrugs.
It pays the bills. It's certainly not as exciting as what Suzette does.
When he says that, he reaches across the table for her hand. She allows him to hold it for only a split second before pulling away.
I love being around people, she says. Because of my job, I know everyone in this town.
Actually, her eyes widen as a thought seems to occur to her.
I could be of help to you, Enzo.
Enzo frowns. Me?
Yes!
She dabs her lips with her napkin, and I can't help but notice her lipstick is completely intact. I'm fairly sure mine rubbed off several lettuce leaves ago, but I guess that's okay, since it was the exact same color as my lips.
You're looking for customers for your landscaping business, aren't you? Well, I know everyone in all the surrounding towns buying new houses. I can put your name in the welcome package.
His mouth falls open.
You would do that?
Of course, silly.
And then she touches his arm again. Again. Is she trying to go for some sort of world record?
We're neighbors, aren't we?
You do not know if I am any good.
Enzo is really good at what he does. Sure, some percentage of the women who hire him only do so because he's hot, but he keeps clients because his work is stellar, and he knows it. But he also feels strongly that he should prove himself.
In that case,
she says,
maybe you should give me a private demonstration.
I don't like where this is going.
We desperately need work on our backyard,
Suzette explains.
I would love to do some serious gardening back there, but I'm afraid I don't have a green thumb. If you could show me what you can do and give me a little instruction on top of that, I would be happy to recommend you to everyone I know.
Enzo looks over at me. He opens his mouth, almost certainly about to ask if I'm okay with this arrangement. But then Suzette says,
you know what I love about the two of you? You trust each other, unlike a lot of couples. Enzo doesn't have to ask your permission, Millie, for any little silly thing.
And then he shuts his mouth.
So, what do you say? She asks him. Do we have a deal?
I flash a desperate look at Jonathan, hoping he will intervene and say that he is not okay with this. But he is just sitting there, shoveling bites of that weirdly delicious salad into his mouth, not the slightest bit perturbed. Of course, why should he be upset? All Enzo would be doing is a little yard work next door. There's no reason to get jealous. And let's face it, it's not like Suzette is the first woman to hit on my husband. She's not the first, and she won't be the last. Except, there's something about Suzette's flirting that enrages me more than the usual bored housewife who sees my husband as eye candy. I can't quite put my finger on it.
Sure, Enzo says. I am happy to.
Martha comes back out of the kitchen, carrying more plates of food. I glance back at the children's table to see if they've made any progress on their salad.
usually something eaten only under threat of punishment. And I'm shocked to discover that even Nico has nearly cleaned his plate. I'm also mildly jealous of the fact that the kids only seem to have been given one fork each. Martha pulls away our salad plates and lays down a dish in front of me that looks like something Italian. Unfortunately, Suzette has no idea that Enzo is so picky about Italian food. Well, she's about to find out. Enzo looks down at the plate, inhaling deeply.
Is this pasta alla norma?
Suzette bobs her head excitedly.
Yes, our chef is Italian, and I guessed from your accent that you are Sicilian, so he thought you might enjoy this.
I hold my breath, waiting for Enzo to push it away, or possibly take a few bites to be polite. But instead, he takes a mouthful of spaghetti, and his eyes almost start tearing up.
Oddio, it tastes just like how my nonna used to make it.
I'm so glad you like it,
she gushes.
It does have a wonderful mouthfeel, doesn't it? Of course, I'm sure it's not as good as it is when Millie makes it.
Millie does not cook this dish,
Enzo says. Suzette's long eyelashes flutter.
No?
Everyone at the table is now staring at me like I am the worst person in the universe because I don't make my husband pasta alla Norway, or whatever the hell it's called. In my defense, anytime I try to cook something Italian, he acts like I just tried to feed him poison. Who knew he would like this so much that it would make him cry? I pick up my fork and spear what looks like a piece of eggplant. I shove it in my mouth and... Wow, that is pretty good. I'm not about to start crying over it, but... this is some really good pasta.
Oh, Millie, Suzette giggles. You're using the dessert fork.
By the end of this night, if I have not stabbed Suzette with one of these forks, it will only be because I'm not sure which one to use to do it.
9. You are mad,
Enzo notes. I don't know what his first clue was. Maybe the way I barely said a word as we walked home from the house next door, me carrying the apple pie, because even after instructing me to bring dessert, Suzette had her chef go ahead and make some amazing chocolate souffle. Maybe it was the way I slammed the refrigerator door as I shoved the uneaten pie inside. Or the way I stomped up the steps to our bedroom and shut the door behind me, only coming out to say goodnight to the kids.
I will eat the apple pie, he says as he crawls into bed beside me. I love the apple pie. I don't care if you dropped it on the floor.
I didn't drop it on the floor. No?
I groan.
The fact that Enzo has no idea what I'm upset about is making it hard to be mad. Also, he's not wearing a shirt, which makes it even harder to be mad. Do you really have to work in Suzette's backyard? I say. He leans back against the pillows and sighs.
Oh, this.
Well, is it really necessary?
Why does that bother you?
Because.
Because is not an answer,
he says, which is irritatingly something I say to the kids constantly. I just feel like Suzette has an agenda.
Agenda? I fold my arms across my chest. You know. I do not know.
Oh my God!
I flop over in bed.
Enzo, that woman was flirting with you shamelessly all night. She didn't let up for a second.
He clutches his chest in mock horror.
A woman flirting with me?
Mava! How can I possibly resist that?
I roll my eyes. Okay, okay. We will probably run off together.
Okay.
He grins at me.
I am flattered you worry, but Mili, you know I would never, ever look at another woman.
Oh, really?
Really, he says. I would be stupid to cheat.
Would you?
Oh, yes.
He flops on his side, propping his head up on his hand.
You are my wife, the mother of my children. I love you so much.
Okay.
Also, he adds, I know better than to double-cross you. I would like to keep breathing.
I snort.
Yeah, right. How can you say you're worried about Suzette?
He retorts.
Suzette, she is the one who needs to worry.
Ha ha, very funny.
I am not making a joke, he says, although his lips twitch. I am scared of you, Milia Cardi.
I make a face at him. Right, like you're Mr. Nice Guy. Truth be told, we have both done some pretty bad things. Unspeakable things. Although, I'd like to think they were all in the name of serving justice. But either way, if you made a tally, I would come out far ahead of my husband. I've done much worse things than he has. After all, he's never done anything so bad that they took away his freedom. But of course, that's only the stuff I know about. I get the feeling that Enzo had a whole life back overseas that I don't know about. I once worked up the nerve to ask him if he ever killed anyone, and he laughed like I was making a joke, but he didn't say no. And then he quickly found a way to change the subject. I only asked the one time, because after that, I wasn't sure I wanted to know. Enzo runs a finger slowly along my jawline.
Mili, he whispers.
I glance over my shoulder at the window where moonlight pours into our bedroom.
When are you going to put in those blinds? Tomorrow, I promise.
I close my eyes, trying to enjoy the sensation of my husband's touch, and then his lips on my neck. But with my eyes,